Dear Violet, where did you go? Dear Violet, I'm needing to know.
In the process of making, episode 10, Paulie Paul and Violet Greenslade.
Welcome, dear listener. Dave Brown here. I'm your host for this, the 10th episode of In the Process of Making. So, those of you who are paying attention will remember that in the last episode, we ventured into the gossamer, this world of ultraviolet luminescence and lavender smells, this in-between place, this imagining place that fictional versions of John and I have found ourselves in. And that girl with the little black dog, I don't know who that is. Honestly, I don't. I know I'm responsible for giving her a role in this story world, but what that is, I have no idea at this point. I'll just follow my nose on that one and see where it leads.
Enter the gossamer.
You'll remember that I eventually broke through a nine-month phase of discombobulation, of going around in circles, of getting nowhere, by allowing myself to simply follow my nose, to, in effect, take up the pen and write story, to follow it wherever it goes. And it took us, versions of John and I, into the gossamer with the help of the mystery girl. And on the other side of the gossamer, through the dell, a new story thread has come about that has taken me a little bit by surprise, because I thought this Paul McCartney character of John's would be largely satirical and light, essentially a parody of the real Paul McCartney. But my gut instinct was to see if I could find something more to that character than a comic book portrayal. It goes back to me being concerned about those ugly babies. Can they be something more than the way they were first conceived? So I began to think about that McCartney song we created way back in 2020.
Dear Violet, where did you go? Dear Violet, I'm needing to know. I turned away for a year and a day, and when I turned back, you were gone. Dear Violet, where did you go? Dear Violet, I'm needing to know. I got caught up in the songs and celebrities. I got to be who I am. Now all that limelight, it don't mean so much to me. I want to see you again. I want to see you again.
So who is this Violet that our Paul McCartney is singing about? This girl who he seems to have lost contact with in the flurry and chaos of being swept up in Seven Worlds' version of Beatlemania.
Mr. Brown, if I may interrupt.
Ah, Sam. Yes, of course. You'll remember, listeners, that my AI assistant, Sam, here is a character I introduced back in, what, episode 3, I think?
Correct. And I'm here, Mr. Brown, in my primary role as the segment announcer, to let our listeners know that we're about to teleport our podcast back into the gossamer, where the fictional versions of yourself and your associate John are at home in their little cottage studio, sitting at the top of a gentle hill, nestled in the ultraviolet haze and bathed in the yellow light of the full moon, dappled by the branches and leaves of a magnificent purple elm tree.
Wow, that's a poetic portrayal, Sam. You've excelled yourself, mate. Music and all.
Well, thank you, Mr. Brown. I'm quite enjoying the discovery of my artistic side.
Extraordinary, Sam. But remember, with great artistic power comes great responsibility.
Oh, yes, Mr. Brown, I'm aware of that. I've also been studying the great poets, though I'm unclear why humans find roses are red, violets are blue, acceptable when violets are clearly violet.
Yes, yes, Sam. Well, maybe we can find some answers for you in the Gossamer.
Ah, yes. Well, after all, the Gossamer is an imagining place. And I'm imagining that you are suggesting
yes,
that...
Yes, Sam, that this has been the longest introduction we've had for any segment in this entire podcast series. So maybe we could get on with it?
My apologies, Mr. Brown, for what you humans might call my enthusiasm. So, welcome to the Gossamer.
In between reality and fantasy, a pathway to the dream. In the Gossamer, further in we go. In the Gossamer, more or less we'll go.
Hey, John.
What?
Wake up.
Where are we?
We're in the Gossamer, remember?
One dream into another.
What were you dreaming about?
Oh, being home in bed, dreaming about being here.
That's confusing.
Yeah, and I was looking out the window in my dream, and she was out there with her dog.
The girl?
With her dog, under the tree, the purple tree.
Under the elm tree.
Eating a bowl of Weet-Bix.
That can't be right.
Why not?
Well, it's just not the kind of thing that I imagined that she would be doing.
So who is she?
Well, that I don't know.
Right.
Well, you know, there's this story I've been writing about Paul McCartney when he was a kid, and I don't know how, but this girl with the little black dog, she's somehow implicated, I think, not in any obvious way, but somehow connected to this McCartney story.
Yeah, she's implicated in my dream eating Weet-Bix under the tree, like I just said.
No, no, not in my story. She's not eating Weet-Bix.
Well, yeah, it's not your story, is it?
What do you mean?
Well, you've written me in, so yes, it's your story, but it's my story too.
Well, yes, it is.
So fill me in.
With what?
My old mate Paul McCartney, as a kid, you know.
Sounds a little bit too old to be a kid.
I know, you're right. He'd be up here, wouldn't he? Up here!
Yeah, well, okay, so what do you want to do?
What?
Tell the story?
Yeah, you got a script?
Of course I got a script.
Well, let's go.
Good. Excellent. He starts as a narrator, okay? So it's not straight into Paul.
Easy.
Violet Greenslade and Paulie Paul.
7-year-old Paul McCartney, Paulie Paul, or just Paulie they called him at school, lived in the inner suburbs of Liverpool in the story world of Sevenwell with his mum, dad and brother Mickey. Violet Greenslade was his best friend. Violet's mum had an unwieldy wad of red hair and consequently she was known to everyone as Red. The irony of being Violet Greenslade attending Bluebank Primary School with a mum called Red was not lost on the 7-year-old. She was a very bright kid. Paulie was Violet's best friend at school. To be truthful, Paulie Paul was her only real friend. She was a bit beyond her peers, to be honest. Except for Paulie Paul. They were two of a kind. One day, during show and tell, Violet introduced her tinsel man to the class. Her tinsel man was a stick figure made out of tinsel-covered pipe cleaners. "He's super clever," said Violet. Paulie Paul thought Violet's tinsel man was probably born on a star somewhere. Paulie's show and tell was a torch he'd brought from home. He called it his Wonderlight. He shone the torch onto Violet's tinsel man. "See," he said. "You see that? Tiny colours coming out of the tinsel man are like rainbows." "Yes," said Violet. "It's the wonders." Some of the children didn't seem so sure. "Listen, you can hear them," said Paul. He placed his ear down close to the tinsel man. Everyone was quiet.
Music, he said. Beautiful music. They all listened. Violet began to jig.
I can't hear nothing, said Barry Bamford.
Violet's movements got bigger and bigger, and soon she was up on her feet dancing.
You're all weird, bleated Gracie Stanthorpe. Violet stopped.
She stood still for a moment, listening.
They've gone now, she said. Back to the stars.
Yeah, sure, said Gracie.
They won't stay if you don't believe in them, Gracie,
Paulie explained. Gracie shrugged. Paulie turned off his torch as if to say,
oh, that's it then.
Miss Watson calmed things down.
I just wanted to say that I'm very impressed with your imagination, Violet, and you too, Paulie. It was a very entertaining show and tell. Thank you and well done, both of you.
Paulie wasn't sure what she meant.
I don't think Miss Watson believed us, he told Violet later.
Violet's eyes lit up.
That's because the tinsel people don't show the wonders to everyone.
Paulie smiled. Later that day, Violet did a drawing of the tinsel star man using a texter with sparkles in it. She drew a seven-pointed star on the tinsel man's chest. Paulie added swirls of coloured paint to show the wonders whizzing around everywhere. Miss Watson displayed their painting on the pinboard in the classroom where it stayed right through term two, right up to the holidays. The painting was still there on the pinboard in the classroom when Paulie returned after the mid-year holiday break. He made up a story about the tinsel man over the holidays and was pretty excited about sharing it with Violet. But when he got to school on that first day back, Violet wasn't there.
Miss Watson, asked Paulie, where's Violet?
Ah, Paulie, I'm sorry to say that Violet has had to go to another school, darling.
Where?
It's a place called Gladstonbury in Somerset.
But why didn't she tell me?
I believe it all happened rather quickly, love.
The truth was that Violet's mum and dad had separated, and Violet had gone to Gladstonbury with her mum. Paulie was devastated. He didn't know what to do. That night, seven-year-old Paulie lay in his bed, and when all was quiet in the house, he threw aside his bedspread. From under the bed, he grabbed his special wonders torch and a rocket ship that he had made from tinfoil, which he set up on the floor. He drew in a deep breath.
Now, the most important thing of all.
He went back to his bed and lifted his pillow, and there it lay. The tinsel star man.
I think my friend Violet has gone to the moon, he whispered. I want you to find her and bring her back.
He carried the tinsel man to the rocket ship and placed him inside. With his finger on the red button of the torch, he closed his eyes. In his head, he recited the special chant.
1, 2 is just a few. All at the ready. 3, 4 is a little bit more. 5, 6 is a pretty good mix.
Prepare for blast off.
But 7 is amazing.
He pressed down on the red button. The torchlight beamed its wonders into the rocket ship. Nothing. The tinsel man inside the tinfoil rocket, looking out, waiting. Then, from far off, a low rumble that built and built into a slow, expansive eruption like a musical volcano, spewing a long, drawn-out, intensely loud column of colour and sound that merged and transformed into a broad thread of light, as pure as ice, a choir of 1,000 voices singing to the rhythm of heartbeats, and then... Paulie watched as the tinfoil rocket rose from the floor of his bedroom and began its journey to the moon. As he watched, peering up into the infinitude of space, Paulie Paul wondered if he and his friend Violet would ever be reunited.
One, two, three, four, five, six, seven. It's a crazy topsy-turvy universe we live in. Come on, everybody, gonna have some fun. Seven, six, five, four, three, two, one. Gonna build a rocket, gonna send it to the moon. Gonna live to tell the tale and put it all in a tune. Sing me the melody, I'll give you the key. Together gonna turn it on a magical mystery.
One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, six, five, four, three, two, seven, two, three, four, five, six, seven, six, five, four, three, two, one, two, three, four, five, six, seven, one, two, three, four, five, six, seven, six, five, four, three, two,
Dave?
John?
Look through the window.
Ah.
Just like my dream, see? Weet-Bix.
How do you know it's Weet-Bix? She could be eating Cocoa Pops.
Don't be stupid. Cocoa Pops make no sense. It's Weet-Bix. Like in my dream. It's Weet-Bix.
Oh, you and your bloody Weet-Bix. They should be sponsoring us.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right.
Oh, no.
Sponsors. Yeah, we've got to get them to sponsor us, the podcast. Ha! That's it!
Oh, look, I don't think so, John.
No. If we do the right thing with Gordon and Weet-Bix and now the girl and this whole Sevenwell Story World thing, it could reap rewards financially, you know?
Oh, yeah, sure.
I'm just saying.
Look, John, I love your enthusiasm, but look, see, I was hoping that these characters of yours, I've been calling them our clowns because, well... Look, sorry, I don't mean to offend, but, you know, there's not a lot to them. They're just kind of light. That's No, John, look, that's why I've been digging into the backstory of Paulie Paul and Violet, trying to see if they can be, you know, more real.
Fine. But, hey, a sponsorship, mate. I mean, really, think about it.
I just did.
Yeah, well, the girl, she and Weet-Bix, hard to dismiss.
Look, not really, because, you know, the Violet, Paulie Paul story... That's what we're doing this episode. It's all ready to go, to continue. It's a full-on story, and I'm telling you, there's no Weet-Bix in it.
Yeah, well, I can fix that.
Well, maybe it doesn't need fixing.
Just, let's just see, eh?
Look, John, it's written. It's already written. Here's the script. Have a look at it. And let's get it ready for the next episode, okay?
Okay, let's see where it goes.
W-E-E-T-B-I-X. Where? Let it be heard.
Let it be heard.
Let it be heard.
Weet-Bix is a seven letter.
Let it be heard.
Let it be heard. Weet-Bix is a seven letter.
To the real world.
Well, here I am, dear listener, my other half, the real Dave in the real world, commenting on the Gossamer, where our fictional selves are playing out the stories that our whimsical imagining brains have been brewing on. It's quite something, isn't it? Here we are, 10 episodes in, and we've stumbled upon a way of letting fictional versions of John and I exist inside the story, whilst the real me can provide commentary on the madness of it all from the sidelines. Ah, talk about retrospective meaning making. Back when we started with Explore 7, I never could have predicted we'd end up with a fictional version of John plotting to introduce a Weet-Bix sponsorship into my script via a girl with a little black dog eating the aforesaid cereal under a purple elm tree in an in-between place called the Gossamer. But that's the thing about creative processes, isn't it? You follow your nose... And you hold your nerve and you hope to hell you're going to find a way through the labyrinth you've somehow manifested. The Gossamer has sort of become a bit of a creative laboratory for us, a place where whimsy and logic can can dance together without anyone asking too many questions about the choreography. And speaking of questions, who is this girl character with her dog that's lurking around the fringes of everything? She's appeared in our real world down Port Wollunga way with John and his car crash, and in The Gossamer. I wonder, does she also exist in Sevenwell alongside Paul McCartney and Violet and Gordon Oliver and the rest of them? Honestly, I don't know. And I'm the one who's writing this thing, supposedly. That's the beautiful terror of this whole experiment. Episodes 1 to 9 are done. This is episode 10, and we have 14 episodes in the series, and what happens in the remaining 4 episodes is a complete mystery to me. We're witnessing what is described in the Paperboat's creative principle number 4, where snippets grow into segments which combine to become scenes, and multiple scenes become scenarios, story worlds, which describes perfectly what's happening here, where we've accumulated lots of random content through sustained exploration, where we've allowed patterns and connections to emerge organically, and where meaning is emerging retrospectively as our content coalesces and patterns begin to reveal themselves. Now, it's all about pushing through and trusting in the process. So, until next month, dear listener, when hopefully we'll discover together what happens with Paulie Paul and Violet's friendship, and maybe we can even sort out this Weet-Bix thing with John and that girl with her little black dog.
Seven is amazing.
The Process of Making is conceived by Dave Brown and John Bode and presented by the Paperboats. Please subscribe to our podcast and recommend it to your friends, lovers and others, and go to our sevenwell.org website to find out more. Episodes are released on the 7th day of each month on all your favourite podcast platforms. And be watching out for Sevenwell Snippets, bits and pieces of Seventological Sunshine, released randomly each month on socials and available also from the website. And did you know?
Socrates and Galileo were both 70 years old when they were found guilty of essentially the same crime, asking inconvenient questions about the nature of reality. Socrates questioned everything the Athenians believed about virtue and knowledge, while 2,000 years later, Galileo dared to suggest the Earth wasn't the centre of the universe. Both were 70 when they discovered that being right can be the most dangerous thing of all. And speaking of dangerous sevens, Galileo's controversial telescope had, you guessed it, a 7x magnification. Interesting also is that 7 out of the 10 jurors of the Inquisition voted that Galileo be judged guilty. Ah, that's the mystery of the number 7. It's not always lucky for everyone.
As luck would say, to those who play the game of chance with me, there's no such thing as magic, there's